You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Comrades, this is your host of the Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and we were planning on having my good friend Chris join us this morning, but he's been having tech issues. The tech gremlins are causing all sorts of problems, so if he pops in later, great. If not, then you're just stuck with me, and of course we'll have Sven joining me the next 2 days and John Friend on Friday, so got a great lineup for everything. And today I wanted to start by talking about an interesting discussion of the importance of street activism. Because, as many of you know, the Traditionalist Worker Party is going to be holding a rally in Sacramento, California on June 26th. So not too far away, but just enough time to be able to organize everything. And the anti-fascists and the left have declared, "Run the Nazis out of Sacramento!" 3 exclamation points to show they're really serious. Hashtag, not in our city. Stop the Traditional Workers Party. Well, they almost got our name right, so I'll give them credit for that. And of course, on their literature they're distributing, they have the Goodnight White Pride and all this, and the anti-fascist colors, and they have decided that they cannot let us pass. You know, as the anti-fascists of the 1930s and 20s and whatnot always used to say, you know, that they shall not let us pass. And my response would be, as Mussolini said, we shall pass and we shall pass them again. Because when you really think about it, street presence is the end, well, it's not the end result, but it's really step two in a 3-step process of engaging the political system and gaining political power. Step one is distributing propaganda, which is what we're doing right now, that you're listening to a propaganda broadcast, and I take no shame in that phrase, because it's an ideologically motivated thing. If you wanted something that doesn't have an ideological slant, well, good luck, you're never going to find that. That even the most, you know, the reporters that say they have no ideological bias whatsoever, and they're just here to tell the truth. Well, they're liars. No human being, with the exception of Jesus Christ himself, hasn't had a bias in terms of what they say. So they're, you're never going to get fair and balanced, as Fox News and whatnot like to say, because everyone has a personal bias based on your upbringing, based on your morals, based on everything. Then that's a normal human thing, because if you believe you're correct, which I believe, of course, that nationalism is the correct worldview, then I don't really care what the left has to say in many different things. I'll read their writings, of course. I'll listen to their perspectives. But everyone has a normal bias. So you're listening to a propaganda broadcast, and that's perfectly fine with me. So the left, though, you know, is waging a war with our institutions, with the media, and of course on the streets. So the number one thing to be able to engage the political process is people need to know about your ideas. They need to be able to hear the propaganda. They need to be able to hear your perspective. They need to be able to hear your plan for what you're going to bring to the world. That, you know, men are willing to die and to sacrifice for the belief that they can build up a better future, not only for themselves, but for their children and their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren. But you have to present a plan. And that's why in the Traditionalist Worker Party, for instance, we have an economic model. We have an environmental plan. We have a social plan. We have a foreign policy plan. Everything to be able to create a holistic worldview on how, if we gain political power, I should actually say when we gain political power, how we'll make the lives better of our constituents. That's such an important thing to be able to have, that plan. So first thing is get the ideas out there. The third thing, of course, is actually seizing the reins of power, generally through elections, as the way to be able to do it. But number two is a very, very important thing, and that's where we need to be able to transform our movement into. It doesn't discount propaganda, because propaganda is crucial to recruiting new people, to strengthening our members and our constituents in terms of their understanding of our thoughts, and to be able to provide news coverage, to be able to provide insight on the different things happening in the world. But you need to be able to then translate into a real-world presence. And if you look at the left, they've really dominated, really, I mean, the streets. I mean, of course, the campuses. You know, one thing I always, you know, I think back on street presence, I think, to my comrades in Golden Dawn in Greece, who were telling me about how the students, of course, there was a military government that was running Greece for several decades, and the students decided they were going to organize on campuses, the anarchists, the communists, and they were going to rebel against the state. And as a song called Gunfight says, if you stand against tanks, the tanks are going to win. And at one point, these anarchists decided they wanted to rebel against the government and then got surprised when a bunch of tanks rolled over their barricades. But they understood the importance of street presence, and that's what they've been able to do. In Spain, following the death of Francisco Franco, they took to the streets. I mean, everything the left does is always based on the streets, and that's, one, an intimidation tactic to be able to try and dissuade nationalists from coming out, but two, to provide a psychological victory for themselves and trying to psychologically defeat us by showing their masses of numbers in the streets. You know, the chant, "Whose streets are streets," has been used by the left and the right because at the end of the day, that's what we're battling over. We are battling street by street, neighborhood by neighborhood, community by community for control of these regions because our ideologies cannot coexist with one another. There cannot be a coexistence between globalism and nationalism. There cannot be a coexistence between multiculturalism and a folkish identity. Those two things will always be in conflict because they're absolutely opposite ends of the spectrum. There is no way to reconcile them. And that's okay with me, you know, because these people are trying to destroy our faith and our family and our folk. But the left, since the 1960s, with the radical feminist movement, with the anti-war movement, that of course translated into just the left-wing movement in general, the pro-abortion movement, I mean, every single movement has always been based on the streets. I mean, Martin Luther King, I think we can learn a lot from in regards to how he used the media, how he used his own resources, and how he used public demonstrations to be able to advance his ideology. And that's something we need to be able to learn on how we can use our ideology through taking to the streets. So, you know, we have our party paper coming out, which is very exciting. We've, of course, got the party music that's coming out. We've got our daily show. We've got all these things that are coming together. But we need to translate this into a street presence. We need to be able to meet the left on the streets, to declare that these are our streets, and have a ready presence where people, you know, normal people that are not that political can see us, they can get to know us, and they can see that we are a force within their communities. So that's one of the reasons why we've got a very active chapter, two chapters, one in Southern California, one in Northern California, of the party. And that's why we've declared that on June 26th, we will be marching in Sacramento. And that's on the flip side why the enemy is going to come out. They've called out every anarchist, communist, Black Lives Matter, every group of people that is on the left, that is anti-white, that is anti-nationalist, to come against us on June 26th, to try and run the Nazis out of Sacramento. And that's why we cannot let it happen. So, you know, dear listeners, that's why one of the most important things that I would like to be able to discuss with you is why I'd like you to come and join us. Because if you're on the West Coast in the United States, this is the opportunity to be able to marshal our forces and to be able to march. Because if we can get 200, 250 guys in the streets, that is a huge psychological impact because I've seen it in Europe. You know, when the anti-fascists come out and the nationalists are there, the nationalists can match their numbers or outnumber them, they cower. I saw that happened at a protest in England just a few months ago where there were more nationalists on the streets than there were anti-fascists. And the anti-fascists, usually they love to throw bricks, they love to try and brawl, they love to do all these sorts of different things. They were pretty quiet. They kind of just muddled along on the side because they suffered a psychological defeat. And we need to understand, you know, obviously the George Soroses of the world are not going to really be psychologically defeated, but their foot soldiers can be by having a strong street presence. And that can be everything from in your neighborhood to your local bar to a truck stop, putting up nationalist stickers so they see them everywhere, distributing nationalist leaflets, and then having marches to be able to assert our authority on the streets, to bring that real-world presence, to be able to say, we're here, we're not afraid of you, we are claiming this community, and it's ours. That is a huge psychological victory for our people, and that's how every movement starts. That's how we build a true grassroots nationalist movement like they've done in Europe, to be able to bring that to the United States, is by having this street presence. And of course, many of you know, if you've been listening, that we plan then 3 weeks later to be outside of the Republican National Convention, to have a street presence, to be able to show Republican voters left and right that they that we're here and that we are going to fight for our people, that we are going to be able to bring everything together. Oh, Chris, did you join us?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry to keep you waiting like that. Yeah.
Oh, no problem. I was talking to the listeners about tech gremlins being an absolute nightmare. So welcome aboard on the show. And I was just talking for the past few minutes about the fact that we're holding this rally in Sacramento at the end of June, and all the Antifa has declared no Nazis. We're going to run the Nazis out of Sacramento. And my response is, no, you're not.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, San Francisco's not an awful long way away from there, you know, so it's, you know, you are going to have a bunch of left-wing loonies over there, that's for sure.
Well, and that's where I think actually psychologically it's so important to be able to march in an area that's so liberal, that's so multicultural. If we can march there, we can march anywhere. I mean, and that's kind of my perspective, that if we can stand our ground in the most inhospitable territory in the United States, we can hold our ground anywhere. I mean, in the South, in the Midwest, where the majority of people are actually supportive of us. If this rally, I think is going to be so important. If we can win, and hold our rally, and be able to march proudly with our heads held high, which we will do, that there is no retreat, not one step back, you know, as the saying, that's a massive psychological blow to, you know, to the enemy, and a huge, I really think, encouragement to our people. So, you know, let's talk about street presence. What do you think the value is of a real world street presence, and how can we use that for our people?
I think street presence is obviously very important. I think just taking on Antifa or whatever the name of the groups are, you know, just for the hell of it, I think is a dangerous thing because. You know, I think sometimes knocking on doors and handing out leaflets, and that sounds a bit pathetic, but, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, outside a shopping mall at some event you're talking about, like the Republican Party convention or whatever it is. I think that's more important, you know, and you get a lot of young hotheads who want to, yeah, let's go and take on these bad guys. And I said, well, that's not really what we want. You know, that's not really the street presence we're really after. Obviously, if we're attacked, it might be a different story.
Well, exactly. And that's the difference between our purpose is not to fight the left. Our purpose is not to go out and fight Antifa because they've got a huge number of college students that they can just throw into the mix. It's almost like right. I remember right. The opening scenes of Enemy at the Gates, you know, where they the Russian conscripts get off the boats at Stalingrad. And the commissars are there saying, you know, the man with the rifle, you know, goes first, and the man behind him and the man with the rifle dies, pick it up and carry on. And they've got machine guns behind them to force them to run at the German lines. And that's kind of what these anti-fascists are. So that's where I think psychologically the biggest victory comes in encouraging our people to be able to hold our demonstrations peacefully and legally, to be able to show that we have a presence in these areas, and then to be able to show the people they have nothing to be afraid of. Because if we can march and do our events and give our speeches and be able to have a great time, and every time we do an event, we bring more people out, it's a psychological booster to those people that are on the fence or might be intimidated to get out on the streets who haven't done it before, to be able to see, you know, oh, it's not so bad, you know, and then they join us, and it's a psychological booster to our movement.
No, I agree with all the above. I mean, I'm going down to Georgia this weekend, so that should be interesting. In fact, you and I should have a chat off the air about that anyway.
Exactly. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing, because, I mean, there's a lot of press and there's a lot of things about what's going on in Georgia this weekend at Stone Mountain, and the left is calling themselves out the Bastards Motorcycle Club. That is, oddly enough, I mean, I've met a lot of bikers in my day, and I've never met an anti-fascist, anti-racist biker. Even the ones that don't say they have any politics, I always see Confederate flags on their vests and stuff. Yeah. So the biker subculture is not exactly a left-wing subculture. So they're going to be bringing out some Antifa bikers and all sorts of stuff, Black Lives Matter. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing this weekend?
Well, I'm going down and I've just got all my press credentials. So I'm actually sort of going down there sort of hoping to be a little bit neutral, you know, and sort of meet people. As you know, that's what I've been trying to do. So that's my sort of thing, is not really to get in the middle of any melee there, you know, but to obviously be, sort of on the sidelines, watching what's going on, and then maybe meeting people, you know, later on or during the day, and, you know, introduce myself and things like this. You know, and like I said, my job with my show is particularly is networking, to get as many people together. And if there's some little bit of bad blood between various groups or misunderstandings, and, you know, as me as an, you know, an independent and neutral, I maybe, you know, like I've been doing for weeks, as you know, is sort of trying to smooth things over between the different groups.
Well, exactly. There's very few conflicts within the nationalist scene. There's really few things that are so divisive that a couple of beers and conversations in person can't overcome. I mean, if you know what I mean, that a lot of stuff, especially, again, the internet is a great propaganda tool, but one of the biggest problems is it's really easy for anonymous people that might not even be members of different groups, but say they're representing them and start running their mouths or making comments. It can be loonies, it can be Antifa, it can be all sorts of different people that try and cause this disunity. So to be able to cut through the noise, to be able to really just sit down with fellow nationalists and say, look, let's find ways to coordinate and work together and respect one another. That's one of the number one ways we can strengthen our movement. Because we've said before on the show, I think we talked about it last week, there's tens of thousands of active nationalists in America, and there's no reason we're not having rallies of 20,000 people. It's just about coordinating and getting everybody on the same page and working together that's been holding us back.
You know, I think the time is right now. I think if Trump gets in, and I'll be back to Trump again, I think that we can sort of ride that sort of bandwagon. If for some reason he doesn't get the nod from the Republican Party, or, you know, or like I said, he doesn't get, then I think then all gloves are off. You know, our gloves are off as far as the nationalists and patriots and traditionalists.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the worst thing the Republican Party could do for the sake of the Republican Party, because if they betray the will of the voters, which they're likely going to do. They've done it a million times before, but never in such a public way. If they go ahead and steal the nod from Donald Trump, then that's on one hand really good for us as nationalists, because it says, look, these people don't care about you. They don't care about your perspective. They don't care about your vote. They just care about what their paymasters say and their donors say. Time to come on board with a team that actually cares about you and will actually fight for you. And this could be, I mean, we're laying the ground. We need to lay the groundwork within our movement now, because there could be millions of white Americans that are wanting to come on board in the next 6 to 12 months, depending on what happens with this election. And we need to have the infrastructure in place to be able to channel those people and those emotions and that frustration into political progress for the nationalist scene.
I mean, not only, you know, on the Trump thing. Now, there's a couple of things on the Trump. He could run as an independent as well. Or after the election, he could just say, you know, F this, I'm going to set up another party, which is an absolute possibility. So if he sets up another party, then that might be another way, you know, of the nationalists maybe could come together under an umbrella of that. But there's another bunch of people out there who might be disenfranchised, and people don't realize this. Maybe people will laugh. Is a lot of Bernie supporters. There's a lot of Bernie supporters out there. Not complete left-wing communists, you know, they're just working people, and they're gonna, you know, they just, for whatever reason, you know, in whatever state, you know, they've maybe hardcore Democrats, you know, they sort of say, damn, but they're, you know, nobody's representing us. So you could see like a shift towards more sort of national socialism or patriotism or whatever you want to call it. So that's a possibility there, you know.
Well, I agree. And that's one of the great things, you know, for instance, our party being third positionists, that, you know, as Gregor Strasser said, we must take from the right nationalism without capitalism, and from the left socialism without internationalism. And that always really struck me as a very good way to indicate, you know, because the idea of, you know, my household is socialist. I work and provide for my family, and everyone does their job, and we're a team. And that's the idea of what a nation is a team. You know, one big group of people who are united by blood and by culture, working together to help one another. And I think you're right. I was reading a report not too long ago about Bernie Sanders supporters in the coal fields of West Virginia and Kentucky, that, of course, also is going overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. And there's this huge potential of people that are fed up. You know, when they hear Bernie talk about Wall Street, when he talks about the banks, absolutely, when he talks about being left behind, he's talking about issues that we're talking about, where economic third positionism that's neither capitalist nor communist, but puts the nation and families and working people first, that could really appeal to a lot of Bernie supporters and Trump supporters. We can actually steal potentially millions of votes from both sides of the establishment and funnel it into nationalism.
I think what one of the things that I like about both of them, but I don't think Bernie's got the experience, is especially Trump has the experience, is on big building projects. And this is what excites me about him, you know, like, you know, public spending. I know that sounds like taxes and things like this, but, you know, that's what, you know, that how the Germany is, you know, is better roads, better bridges, you know, this type of stuff, you know, old people's homes, you know, sort of low income housing. I'm not talking about, you know, ghettos now. I'm talking about nice places. So I think in that regard, Trump will be better in that, you know. And also I know that he has read Mein Kampf and a few other books like this, you know, and, what's the name of the architect? Albert Speer. His biographies and stuff like this. Yeah, I mean, that's a good book there. And so I think, you know, Trump will be good in that way. I do believe his ego is good for us. You know, I do believe he is an absolute patriot.
Well, and, you know, the funny thing to me is, you know, talking about ego, I think is important because, you know, a man that, you know, pride comes before the fall sometimes, of course. But the fact that he is so headstrong can be a really good thing because, you know, when you've got some banker coming and saying, look, we want you to do this against what you want to do, against your national interests, but we're going to try and buy you off. You know, someone with that sort of headspace of the alpha male, like go-getter, I'm going to build this, I'm in charge sort of thing. He's not going to put up with that, you know, God willing, you know, so that, you know, the idea of great men, you know, throughout history are men that are driven by something and who aren't politicians, because politicians go for the lowest common denominator. They try and buy off as many people and not really accomplish anything and stay in office and make money and things like that. But great men, both, you know, who have done, you know, wonder, you know, I say great in terms of huge, you know, within world history, who've done amazing things and some horrible things, you know, an example would be like Stalin or Lenin or Trotsky. But on the right, of course, we've got plenty of nationalist patriots to look to, that to be driven by a dream and driven by a goal instead of poll numbers, That's what a country needs. That's leadership. Otherwise, we just have, I hate to sound like a nerd, but you go into, in Lord of the Rings, Gondor, you know, the former Great Men of the West Empire falling to pieces because they didn't have a king. They had a steward who was just kind of there. But what they needed was a king. They needed strong leadership to be able to face off against the forces of darkness that were invading their lands. And likewise, we need a strong leader that's willing to face off against the the forces of darkness that are invading our lands.
But, I mean, if you look at, you know, look at Bernie, I really don't like his lack of experience. Now, of course, he's a Zionist, you know, and as well, which I have real problems with. But he's never really done anything. He hasn't started businesses or anything. He's just been on the public dole welfare just about all his life, you know. That sort of worries me. And, you know, then you've got, you know, Cruz, you know, and Clinton, you know, establishment. So they're not really going to change anything at all. It might be, you know, a lot of word there. Kasich, well, you know, he worked for, was it Lehman Brothers, wasn't it? You know, and also he voted for NAFTA. And, you know, so, you know, they've, you know, so I see it. There's really not a lot of choice. If you break it down, you know, I don't see that there is another candidate. I mean, I'm hoping that Trump runs against Clinton because there's a lot of dirt on Clinton, which people don't know about yet.
Well, and the great thing about, I mean, when you really put it all together is when you're in the public spotlight for decades, as Hillary Clinton has been, you make a lot of missteps. And, you know, the fact that her position has always been behind, you know, supporting policies like free trade, like voting for the Iraq war and things like that, that have hurt us. I mean, you know, when people, I hear all the time, you know, we talk about taxes and infrastructure projects. Well, how are we going to pay for it? Well, why don't we just close down some of the military bases we have in 200 countries around the planet? Why don't we stop, spending a $10 million bomb to blow up a, $20,000 Toyota that we gave to ISIS? Why don't we actually invest this money in taking care of the people? Because it's the people's money at the end of the day. It's we're the ones that pay the taxes. And, you know, because the multinational corporations have great tax lawyers to be able to avoid, actually paying anything. It's the people's money, and the money should be used for the people, not nation building around the world, not invading the world, not, buying Israel some more cruise missiles. It should be spent on the people. And that's what, that's what a nation is, where you take care of your people. And the establishment hates the people. They support every policy in the Republican and Democratic establishment to disenfranchise and destroy us. So it's time for something new. Something new has to rise.
And it's time for the Americans that, you know, And, you know, whether they're born here or not, because I want to include myself as an American. And, but, you know, it's like this thing is at the Supreme Court, you know, about these, you know, 4 million that are supposed to be kicked out of the country. And Obongo, as I call him, you know, it was blocking it with, you know, with sort of presidential order. I mean, who's he representing? Is he representing America or everybody else? You know, it's, that's to sort of come back to Trump. That's what I want, somebody who's going to put America first, not these other people. You know, I mean, to hell with, you know, the $11 million a day to Israel and all the freebie stuff they get that people don't know about, that they get out the back door of the Pentagon, and the $1 jets that Americans say, oh, we don't need these jets anymore. What are we going to do with them? Well, let's sell them to Israel for $1 each. I mean, that's what a lot of people don't understand, you know about that type of stuff. So we're just giving away a lot of our stuff as well as freebies, you know, so it's not just there, you know, it's, but we, you know, even if you can't afford to have the jobs in America anymore, send them to Mexico. I know that sounds terrible. Why not keep, you know, our neighbor happy rather than sending, you know, these jobs to China or Taiwan or, you know, or somewhere else?
Well, and that's the issue of globalism versus nationalism, that at the end of the day, you know, economically, that's where Noam Chomsky and other left-wing folks, I think, have done a really good job about discussing the race to the bottom, which international capitalism pushes for, that at the end of the day, you know, first it was take jobs to Mexico, and now it's take it to Bangladesh, you know, to drive to the bottom for the worst working conditions for the cheapest amount. Human lives don't matter. It doesn't matter if you've got 100 employees a month throwing themselves out the windows because they're literally in slave-like conditions. It's all right. Well, you know, there's more of them, that human beings under capitalism, it's the same as communism, because when you've got an ideology that is defined by human beings being economic units, it destroys the value of what a human being is. As, you know, as a Christian, I believe is a creation of God, the almighty creator, that we all have a value. And international capitalism and communism treats human beings like widgets or gasoline or some other expendable fuel that they just burn up and use, and they don't care about, and then they'll always just find more, you know, and that's the end result of the international system, is not just in the white world. They've started here because we're the number one enemies of globalism, but the end result is using all human beings and all nations and all cultures as an expendable resource to be able to make profits for the international elites.
No, absolutely, and we've discussed this before, is like materialism as well. You know, if you have to spend your money, be careful how you spend it. You know, try and buy an American product. Don't try and keep up with the Joneses. Can you go to the Salvation Army store or the local thrift store or the charity store or something to buy something? You know, sort of be careful. You know, turn your heater down a little bit. You know, don't use the air conditioner. You know, don't smoke. You know, I mean, don't drink to excess. Mind you, I like my booze, but you know, there's certain ways that you can help yourself to help the country.
Well, exactly. And that's really, you know, I was talking with Sven about it on the show, I believe it might have been the first week, actually, about the idea of bartering, where if you know a guy that works on cars, and if you grow tomatoes, trade tomatoes for car repairs. You know, do this thing that where if you're not exchanging money, and we can exchange goods and services in a barter system, then we're not paying taxes to pay into the system. We're removing our consent, and we're keeping it local to help our neighbors. And at the end of the day, everything we do has to be based on keeping it local, supporting local businesses, supporting one another in this movement, and being able to build a state within a state that does not at all opportunities while following the law does not consent to this the system.
There's so many things, though, you know, tomatoes and car repairs, you know, nails, cutting hair, you know, people doing their nails, just the women, writing CVs, you know, sort of resumes. Oh, you know, there's so many things out there, you know what I mean, helping each other with childcare. There's so many things that you can keep it in the, you know, in the community and build your community up. And there's so much you can go out there and offer. I mean, you know, this is what we're trying to do with all this network, and I'm really sort of upbeat about this coming year and this weekend, especially, as long as I don't get a brick in the head or something.
Well, God willing, you won't. And you know, that's the thing. You know, we had a show, and I apologize. I was actually late getting home. There was a road construction that was absolutely terrible, so I kind of threw our prep, and you had some tech issues. But I'm really excited to be able to see on you know, on next Tuesday, after you're able to go down to Georgia, because I know there's folks, you know, my comrades from the League of the South, the Council of Conservative citizens, other pro-white groups who are going and are going to march together. I, unfortunately, have expended my travel budget for a while. I've been doing a lot of traveling. I need to spend a couple weeks at home to before my wife absolutely murders me for spending every dollar on gasoline going to all the different events. But I'm going to be excited to be able to hear your report when you get back and give us a full breakdown of what happened.
Well, hopefully I'll be up in Philly as well the weekend after.
Yes, we will be speaking of, as we come to the close of our show, at the end of the month on April 30th, we are going to be in Philadelphia holding a party meeting and a concert. So anyone who's interested, get in contact with me, go to tradworker.org and message us. I'll get you in touch with our local coordinator. And again, the belly of the beast, where the anti-fascists say that these are our streets and we're going to drive the Nazis out. Well, guess what? The nationalists are organizing, the nationalists are growing, and we're going to be able to be victorious. So, Chris, I apologize for the for the shorter show for with all other issues, but next week we'll be sure to get the full amount of time to be able to discuss what happened in Stone Mountain. And I really hope you have safe travels. And so you'll be here to give us a report on Tuesday then?
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, I mean, I'll be on the road, but you know, if the worst comes to the worst, I'll Skype in using my iPhone or something like this, and you know, so I should be okay. But yeah, let's talk in a little while, and you know, off the air, and you know, sort of, you know, bang heads a little bit, come up with some ideas about this weekend.
Excellent. Well, sounds great to me, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us.
And no problem at all.
Dear listeners, thank you guys so much. I'll look forward to being here tomorrow with Sven, and we're going to have an absolutely great rest of the shows for the rest of the week. So thank you all for listening. I'll talk to you all soon, and hail victory.
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArian.com.